Mother. Wife.
Air Force veteran.
Gun rights advocate.
This is Stacy on the Right. Here's your host, Stacy Washington.
You're live and direct with Stacy Washington for hour three of Stacy on the Right here on SiriusXM's Patriot Channel. Let's get into it. Welcoming into the program, Jay Ratliff, aviation expert and blogger. And really, we're so grateful for your time tonight, Jay. Thank you.
Anytime, Stacy. You know that.
Well, I got to tell you, having to take a flight this week, I was not happy to see the. They actually have video of it now that you can watch. Mm-hmm. You have this plane coming down, and to be frank, I mean, I've flown a lot, but I'm not a pilot. I don't know anything about air travel other than the stuff that goes on inside the cabin. But it did look like it was coming down kind of fast and at a sharp angle. Anyway, it made contact with the runway, and it looked like the landing gear failed immediately. And then the plane just spun around on itself, and the wings snapped off, and it remained upside down. I mean, really frightening to watch the crash. Tell us, what do we know? What happened here?
Well, as that aircraft was coming in on final approach, Stacy, they were made aware of a crosswind that was coming right to left that could be gusting up to as much as 35, 40 miles an hour. Now, flight crews, when they're coming in, typically protocol will call for them to increase their descent speed just a bit to help offset some of that crosswind. So the one thing you don't want to do is come in too slow. It's going to be a little bit fast. This looked like it might have been a little bit faster than as it should have been. And, of course, the investigation that is going to be ongoing is going to give us all the answers. But one of the things that was quite telling in that video that we saw, one of them, was the fact that normally at the end of the final approach, right before landing, the aircraft flares up, or there's an emphasis on bringing the nose up just a bit so the main landing gear under the wing will touch down first, and then you've got a few seconds where it rotates right or rotates down and then it comes to rest on the forward landing gear. These three almost hit at the same time on the runway. And I think with such force, that right landing gear, it's going to be interesting to see if they blew a tire, if the landing gear itself gave way, if there was a mechanical problem with the gear that caused it to collapse. We don't know. But it seemed like almost immediately that airplane pitched to the right. And it could have been where they had an issue with the landing gear. We don't know yet. But looking at this based on the last 33 years of me watching these types of things, that seems to be consistent with what might have happened. And again, we'll have to wait and see what may have caused that. I'm not suggesting pilot error, mechanical situation, or weather related. We've got to figure out what happened and the sequence of events. But as the airplane tipped to the right, it caused the wing, in essence, to rip off the aircraft. Now, when it did, there's fuel in that wing. So you've got jet fuel that's now spewing out of that wing. Stacy, was actually a good thing it did break off and trailed that aircraft, because the fire of that particular portion was behind the fuselage by quite a bit. And that really helped, I think, the survivability for the people that were on board that aircraft. The fortunate aspect that wing came off, because the last thing you'd want to have would be have a rupture in that fuel system where you have fuel that is going to be spewed onto the fuselage that's going to be ignited, cause a fire. And if you've got fire and rescue that's 60 to 90 seconds out, and they did a great job getting out there as quickly as they did, we could have been looking at just a completely different scenario here. So, but the aircraft comes to rest on its top. You have the flight attendants getting everybody off the aircraft. They did a very good job in doing so. You still had people that, special kind of stupid to collect all of your carry-on bags to then exit a burning airplane that's on its top. But we still had several people that the video showed walking across the tarmac, dragging their bags, which in essence slowed down the evacuation process for everybody behind them. And that to me remains one of my huge issues with these evacuations, are people that ignore the instructions of the flight attendant and still find a way to grab all of their bags, slow up that process, and then get off the airplane. It was several years ago in Russia, we had an airplane with 41 fatalities. because it was on fire. Only the front exits were open, and you had people that were slowing down the process of the evacuation by collecting all their bags. Airplane blows up. People died. And it took far too long to get people off because of that bag situation. But here, the good news is, although we had three critical injuries, apparently none life-threatening, and everybody was able to walk away or survive this particular situation, and certainly that's great news.
So just to set people's minds at ease, if you are in a plane crash and you get off the plane and your bag is still remaining on the plane, they don't confiscate it and send it to the bag museum or auction it off on eBay. They
really?
Eventually return it to the terminal where you can gain your bag back. Like, it's the labels are still there. Mm-hmm. But how would you sleep at night if you knew that you were too busy grabbing your carry-on from the overhead bin and you got off the plane and then it explodes and everybody else is still on there because they were waiting for you? Come on. We got to get a little TED Talk going on that. That's wrong.
It is way wrong. And, you know, each aircraft is designed so that if half the exits are blocked, the flight attendants can still get everybody off that aircraft in 90 seconds or less. Now, think about it. The airplanes you and I board takes 40 minutes to put everybody in their place.
And it's the people with the bags. Am I hitting you guys? They're the bags. The ones who have the overhead carry-ons, have to wrestle it in because it's a little bit too thick for the overhead bin. And they take up extra time. And that's why we can't get on the plane and leave out on time.
And for all of us that sit in the aisle seat, thank you for those 73 smacks that they give us as they're coming in and out of that airplane. But, those airplanes are designed to get everybody out in 90 seconds, and we have seen over the last several years, instead of a 90-second evacuation or less, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes. And the reason for that can be directly attributed to the idiots that decide that their bags are more important than, A, their life, and the people behind them. We had an American Airlines flight a number of years ago. It's on fire. I mean, the smoke is billowing. And yet you see these people dragging these big bags behind them, even though the flight attendants are pleading with them to get off the airplane and to leave those bags behind. But, you know, sadly, it continues to happen. And I would love to see the Federal Aviation Administration finally identify this as the problem it is and have the Department of Transportation or the FAA come out and say, folks, if you evacuate an aircraft and there's a video of you dragging your obvious large bag behind you, you're going to be looking at a $50,000 fine or something so that there's some punitive measures taken for somebody who deliberately and intentionally delays the evacuation of an aircraft in an emergency situation. Those types of things won't happen. And I fear to say there may be a future day, I hope not, that you and I have to have that discussion where a plane had fatalities because people were too slow in getting off the aircraft.
Well, the one thing that we could do is, you know, I know this is very controversial for me to say, but
please,
that's part of the reason I'm here.
That's right.
It's because I'm willing to say this stuff, but it's the core responsibility of men because they're taller and stronger, usually certainly have deeper voices and are able to command the attention of other people more readily. The men around those individuals who are working on their bags to simply say either deplane or get out of the way so the rest of us can get off the plane. And if it becomes an issue where the person just wants to stand there, two men, just they make eye contact, they put that person behind a row of chairs, just push them into a row, and let everyone else deplane. If they're concerned about their bag, they stay behind to take care of that instead of slowing everyone else up. And I actually think that's fair. I mean, if your bag is really important,
totally
right?
Fair.
You have jewelry in it. Yep. You have something in it that's priceless. You can't leave it behind. Step aside. Let everyone else get off first, and then you get your bag. But you can't have it both ways. And I think the fine, I hate hearing it. I hate hearing that. Like $50,000 is a lot of money. But it is a deterrent, right?
Well,
you're
endangering somebody's life. So what's somebody's life worth? So,
at this point, the
FAA has done nothing on this other than issue committee studies that have indicated how this should stop. And it's going to require, as it always tends to do in the world of aviation, somebody's going to have to get killed. And then these same people are going to pull a hamstring, run into the podium so that they can announce what they're going to do to fix it. Well, guess what? Let's fix it before it's a problem. But, you know, when they did the interviews of the people that were on board this plane, and one of the good things that came out of this was when the aircraft finished its role. Seconds after they were landing, now they're upside down. There wasn't this panic, every person for themselves mentality. The people that were being interviewed said, we actually were helping each other off, helping each other out of their seats, helping people to that were hurt to try to help them along. So you had this group of individuals that just came together in this crisis, and they were looking out for each other. And I thought, boy, could we use a lot more of that in this world today than what we have? And how great that was, because there's a lot of times, you know, in an emergency situation, you have to worry about stampedes and people walking over people and pushing people down and all those things. That didn't happen here. Even though you had an airplane that had visible fire, the smoke was there. And, of course, the adrenaline, the panic, all of these things that you set in from a shock standpoint, it just made it an unbelievable, surreal experience. And yet these people came together and they acted as one. And it was just great to see. And, yes, the beauty of this, Stacey, is we're going to learn what happened and we're going to learn from it so that we can apply the lessons to future flights. We're going to be able to make commercial aviation safer as a result. And we're able to do so without a loss of life. And that's something that we're always saying, how great that is, that we can learn absent of that. But I don't want to ever minimize what these people are going to be going through now for the rest of their life. In my years in the industry, I had to work many times with individuals that were survivors of plane crashes or the sole survivor of a plane crash. And the emotional health-related issues that they're going to be going through, I mean, it's going to require, you know, certainly our prayers for everybody involved, because they're going to be dealing with this for some time to come.
That's true. So I just want to make it clear, everyone, think of these important details that are being shared. You know, it's always it's informative, and it's also a teensy bit annoying when she says, you know, you're on your Boeing 737 or, you know, and you can learn the details of your Boeing 737 MAX and blah, blah, blah. And she opens up the flight information card and you're thinking, I've read it a million times. And, you know, you're looking around and everyone's kind of in their phones and listening their last text messages off or trying to get their seats, you know, handy wiped down. And everyone's kind of doing their own thing. But then you see a crash like this one today, where I was actually shocked that the shocking thing to me was that the plane landed upside down, and I was imagining them all strapped in, hanging down like that, and the 18 people who were injured, some of them critically, just I think three or four critically, that maybe they weren't buckled in, or maybe their buckles came unengaged, or, you know, somehow something that was stowed came loose and hit them, and so they got injured. And so I was just trying to imagine, like, how were they dealing with that? And, of course, there's always people who are in hysterics, screaming and crying. And so there was probably a lot going on, and they managed to deplane in a very orderly fashion and help each other. So there's a lot to pick up from this one.
Oh, there is. And, you know, I used to tell my kids when we would fly, close your eyes and tell me how many rows between us and the nearest exit. So that if you ever are in an accident, you can't see because there's smoke. You know that the emergency exit is six rows behind us or four rows in front of us. It's always a good idea when, just like a lot of people go into a theater, I would tell my kids the same thing. Close your eyes. Tell me where the nearest exit is. Just in case there's an emergency, we don't need to panic or try to think. We just react. And it's the same thing when we fly. If we know exactly where those exits are, and if you're acquainted with, okay, does that door come in, go out? How would I have to open it if I needed to? Those few seconds can not only save your life, but a lot of people's lives as a result. And it's just a matter of habit, because to me, knowing your environment, knowing where those exits are at, knowing what your options are in the event of an emergency, it only increases your likelihood of survival in the event that time is of the essence. And while other people might be panicking, trying to figure out what's going on, you know, I'm four rows away from where I need to be. I need to get there, turn left, and that's where the exit's at.
That's such a good point. And then I'll just add, my pet peeve is seeing someone who's literally 4 foot, 11 inches tall, seated in the exit row. The door is meant for any size person to open, but is it really the best idea for you as a very short and tiny person, very slight, to be in the exit row? Because that's the door you have to open. And you're attesting to the fact that you're not only willing to open it, but that you will, that you're not going to get hysterical. Yes. You're not going to fly off the handle. You're not going to climb over the back of the seat in front of you and run. You're going to turn and follow the directions and twist and pull on that door and then push it out. That's what you're saying you're going to do.
And take it with you as you go. Yes.
That's right. You're going to push it out. And if it's the kind that pops off, you're going to push it down so it drops. And then as the slide inflates, you're going to be the first one down it. You're not going to turn around and talk or have a conversation or ask someone to help you. Can you help me open this door? You're saying, I'm sitting in the exit row and I'm capable of turning that lock. I'm determined. I'm going to turn it one time. I'm going to push it with everything I've got. It's going to go out of the plane, and then I'm going to jump on that slide as soon as it's fully inflated, and I'm the first one out of the plane, and everyone else in the exit row is agreeing that they're going to get out and that they're going to begin that orderly evacuation. If you are tiny, if you are 90 years old, no offense, I have good friends who are over 90.
Well, we wouldn't let 90-year-old people sit in that emergency exit.
I don't know. I just was on a plane. I saw a little old lady. She was sitting there. She looked very frail. I was like, what is going on now?
Those individuals, because the flight attendants will come back and they'll chat with each people in the row, and they're listening for a verbal response. Because
she nodded with a smile. She said yes. She nodded and said yes in her little old lady voice. And I had my mouth hanging open, and my husband was like, flies are going to get in there. And I closed my bottom lip because I was like, I cannot believe that that little old woman is in the exit row.
Can you tell us which airline it was on?
Southwest.
I'm surprised because, that type of thing shouldn't happen at all. And most of the time, the flight attendants are all over that. Of course, Southwest is open seating in a lot of things, too, now.
Until that's about to end. Yeah, they're ending it. But right now it's open seating. If you're in the A, a lot of people fill up in that exit row, and it usually is full of people. The tall people want it, but the short people get there first, and they're sitting
there. I was saying when you said 4'10", I'm 6'1". That's the row I want.
I'm 6'2", and I want that row. Short people can sit anywhere and have 5 inches of leg room, but if you're over 6 feet tall, you need the exit row. Or the bulkhead, right? You don't get to keep your bag with you, but you get the leg room. But I'm concerned that people, in an advanced society, the word on the street is, history shows, we get soft. We don't use common sense as frequently. The money makes us kind of nincompoops. And this whole conversation is surrounding around safety, being situationally aware, and people making responsible decisions. Don't sit in the exit row if you're elderly, you can't handle the door, you're short. Don't do it. It's just not worth it. What if people die? How will you sleep at night? Same thing with the people who are grabbing their big old carry-on bags and trying to get them out the door with them. Why are you doing that? What are you thinking about right now? Are you thinking about people living? Or are you thinking about yourself? These are important conversations to have because sometimes we get far away from the reality. We have amazingly safe air travel in this country. So that's why all of these recent incidents have been so disturbing.
Well, there was an Air France flight that came in for landing, and it was a situation where the aircraft landed long. It was flight 358, and if you look at the images of this, it happened back in 2005. They had a total number of 309 souls on board. If you look at the pictures of that aircraft, it landed in bad weather, went off the end of the runway, broke into pieces, caught on fire, exploded. You look at the aircraft, there's nothing left of it. It is burnt to the ground. And the flight attendants got everybody off in 60-some seconds. And there's no way on God's green earth they ever could have done that had it been a situation where people were interested in grabbing their bags. It was called the miracle in Toronto, where they had a situation where this airplane came down and the flight crew did an unbelievable job. But, if you're ever bored and you want to look at the images of Air France Flight 358, that was an airplane that had a bunch of people that were interested in doing what they needed to do to make sure they got out of the way so everybody could get off that airplane. And they did in just moments before that airplane went up.
Wow. Yeah. So there's a whole page on Wikipedia about Air France Flight 358.
Oh, yeah. The pictures are images. It's one of those examples we use in the industry of this is how you do it. And, the people that sit around and snap their fingers at flight attendants to bring them their next drink, I want to grab their iPad and smack them upside the head with it. Because these are emergency evacuation specialists who are trained on how to save our lives in an emergency don't you dare snap your finger at them or talk down to them like they're there just to bring us our next snack or drink. That is incredibly upsetting to me, and because I know what these men and women go through. I know the training they go through, and it is unbelievable physically what they go through, as well as emotionally and mentally, to prepare for that job. They are very well trained. When this airplane was upside down with the Endeavor Air, the Delta Express flight, they had to remember to disengage the doors. Because remember, any time that an aircraft is flying, you have the safety slides engaged. They're attached to the door. You open the door, the slide goes out. When that airplane's upside down, you don't want those slides engaging because it's going to create a problem where you're not going to be able to get off the aircraft.
Yeah,
so the flight crew had to be aware enough to disengage those doors before they opened them to get everybody off that aircraft quickly. Those men and women did a great job. And again, you just can't sing their praises enough. And I don't care if it's a regional jet or if you're on a Delta Airlines flight, the flight crews are incredibly well-trained and they deserve AR respect. And certainly we need to obey their instructions when we've got an emergency situation such as the one we had here.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you'll come across a flight attendant who isn't the nicest, and what I usually do is I just try to think about what I'm like when I've had a really bad day, everybody's been mean, and I'm pretty much a sourpuss, and I try to think, okay, this person's probably had a really tough day, and I just keep my request to a minimum. You know, I just, you know, I if they offer me drink or snack, I just take my drink and my snack, and I leave it alone, throw my stuff away when they come by for the trash, try to offer a smile, and thank them when I get off the plane. But most of them are so professional and so upbeat, even when they have bad passengers. I mean, I've really seen some pretty interesting interactions. And the flight attendants are usually the most professional person on the flight. So I agree with you. I think, but again, if you're entitled, if you're only thinking about yourself, you're thinking about your bag, you're probably not going to be that good airline customer. Because the best airline customers are ones who you actually do listen a little bit while they're doing the safety presentation, check and see where the exit is in relation to where you're seated, follow the rules about sitting in places if you're in open seating, and most importantly, if they start giving you directions because there's an emergency, follow the directions because it could it's not just your life that you could save. It's the people behind you, right?
Yeah, and please don't hand them your bag when you board the plane and tell them to put it in the overhead storage compartment. That's not their job. That's our job as passengers, to stow our own luggage. And yet a lot of times people look at the flight attendants as the ones responsible for putting their heavy bag in the overhead storage compartment. Nope, that's not what they're there for. And that's where the other men or other people step in and try to help everyone else to get their bags up there. That normally you don't have a shortage of that on an airplane, which is good. But Stacey, I smiled because when you talk about encountering somebody that's having a bad day, my wife and I, she's a sweet little girl from Savannah I've been married to for 18 years. I tell her it's a challenge. Okay, get them to smile. So she'll spend the entire flight trying to do something to try to get them into a good mood if we're at dinner, on an airplane, or whatever. Because you're right, you don't know what those people are going through. They may have just got the worst news of their life right before that flight. And they are still on duty. They're still doing their job. Maybe they lost a parent. Maybe something's happening with one of their kids. They're still at work. They're trying to make it work. And yeah, they deserve a break from the people that are, like I said, snapping their fingers at them.
Yep. And I always notice, and I always happen to be in observer mode. I'll just, before I put my earbuds in, I'll catch the, this is the problem child on the flight. There's always one. And you can see, and what I try to do is I try to just make eye contact with the flight attendant. It's such a comfort. The person is acting like the problem child. And when the flight attendant gets done with that person and they move on to the next person, I just kind of turn my head over so slightly. That movement in your peripheral, you'll look, and I just give them a look at like, this is going to be interesting. And you can see them kind of like, their shoulders will relax a little bit, like, okay, you saw that craziness too. And then, you just kind of smile a little and look back at what you're doing. And there's just that acknowledgement oftentimes is enough to diffuse, because you're feeling like on edge, because you can hear the person making demands. And, we need to sit here with this and that. And that the flight attendant is thinking, oh, man, I thought we were going to have an easy flight. There's things we can do to try to help. We all know what a bad day feels like, what it looks like. And those flight attendants, like you said, if push comes to shove, and please, Lord, don't let it come. But if it does, the flight attendant is the one who, she's desperate. He's desperate to get every person off alive. This is their, this is like their moment. And they don't want to be presiding over any deaths on a flight. No. They want everyone off the plane. And so all we, the least we could do is help, like just cooperate.
And at the end of a flight, look, there's times that my wife and I will pull them off to the side and we'll give them a cash tip and say, look, we're buying you lunch. I know you're not allowed to take it, but take it anyways. Just something to, because look, they don't get paid a whole lot of money. They have to put up with us. And that's the employee that you deal with the longest duration time-wise of anybody that works with the airline. And they're the ones that, yes, are there to save my life. So there's been many, first five flight attendants, many times we'll tip each one of them just as a thank you. And part of that's because I was in the industry for so long. And the other part is that God's blessed my wife and I with a great business where we can try to be a blessing to other people. And that's certainly what we try to do. But just to acknowledge somebody does a good job, even if it's just a thank you, wow, I don't think I could have done what you just did. You're great at what you do. I'm glad you're here. Thanks for being on our flight. Any of those kind words can carry them for 3 or 4 days, and they'll remember that for a long, long time, because most people, they're just not willing to take that moment to acknowledge somebody doing a good job. They'll think it, but sadly, sometimes we don't express it, and we really need to.
We really do. And so it is my hope that you picked up something very useful from tonight. We are always so grateful when we can have experts like yourself join us on the program. You actually have a very interesting bio here. You not only nationally recognized radio and TV aviation analyst, but the 2016 mm-hmm. Travel Weekly Magellan Award winner and an award-winning international author, 25-year veteran of Wall Street, teaching others how to flip stocks, in addition to your aviation knowledge. So great to have you tonight. I really appreciate, I feel like people learned a lot. We're ready to fly and be good passengers. We're ready.
Absolutely. And anytime you need me, young lady, you know it, 24/7, you just let me know.
I will. We'll have you back. It's so great to have you here. And we really thank you for your expertise.
My pleasure.
All right. Have a wonderful evening.